Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Steve Hansen, the legacy between the years 2012 and 2019. Sir Steve Hansen oversaw an era of such remarkable success that it's almost impossible to repeat. His 15-year career, that should be 2002 then, his 15-year career surely at the All Blacks coaching team is the heaviest footprint in rugby history. More than a biography, Steve Hansen, the legacy, award-winning writer Gregor Paul tells a compelling story of the former policeman, his quest for world rugby dominance, and his journey to coaching greatness. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the Isle of the Thin White Cloud itself, Gregor Paul. Gregor, good morning for us. What time is it over there?
About 10:30 p.m.
Blimey.
Nearly bedtime.
It's way past your bedtime. Thanks for joining it. Just give us a little bit of background about yourself and what your interest for Steve Hansen.
I'm a rugby writer here in New Zealand for the New Zealand Herald. So I guess that's been my job for far too long now. And in the process of doing that, got to know Steve quite well. And opportunity came up to write his book. So here we are.
So for those who don't know, because, you know, you mentioned rugby union and the All Blacks come up, it's, you know, they go together like, you know, they're hand in hand. The story of rugby union from the beginning is linked in with the All Blacks. What made Hansen stand out, you know, in a list of greatness that goes, you know, back, you know, you can basically goes back decades?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, probably results are what made him stand out. But even in a phenomenal, successful team like the All Blacks, who've had, you know, success forever, his period stands out as being yet more successful even than those particularly good periods. And I guess the book is a story about, well, okay, that's pretty obvious, but what was it that he brought? What did he do to get them to that point? And, like, I think what made him a special guy, really, is that he valued emotional intelligence probably way more than he valued anything else. So I guess in the UK, you talk about football terms, you talk about the great man managers, you know, Alec Ferguson, Brian Clough, these sorts of guys that were brilliant at managing people. And I guess that was Hansen's big thing. I wouldn't say he was a tactical genius or a strategic genius or a technical genius in any way, but he had a brilliant insight into human beings and how to poke and prod around and get into their heads and pull out the very best of the individual, but yet keep them very connected and aware of what the team was all about and what the overall objectives of the team were.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, New Zealand is a nation that regards rugby like no other. I mean, it is the game. Seemingly everybody plays the game. And you can say, oh, well, it's great for New Zealand because there's nothing else to do over there. And basically, they're all great rugby players. But with that, you know, with the great honour of taking the All Blacks and leading the All Blacks comes great responsibility. And, you know, and it would be this run that he went on, basically this invincible team. I mean, there hasn't been anything like it, has there? In the decades that the All Blacks have had, if you like, dominance or relative dominance over the rest of the rugby union playing world.
Yeah. Look, you're using that word. We didn't use it. I'll use it, pressure, because that's what it is. Like, New Zealand's a wee country. And, you know, you're the All Black coach and you're probably better known than the Prime Minister. And it's a bit cliched, but it's also, I mean, global pandemic aside, which has actually been quite good for New Zealand because it's actually put the Prime Minister in the rightful place and just brought some of the pressure out of being an All Black a little bit or being the All Black coach. But it is pre-COVID. It's pretty much All Black coach, All Black captain, Prime Minister in terms of recognition, profile, pressure. So I guess one of Hansen's big abilities was being able to live in that world, understand pressure, understand the expectation of what the job was all about, because it's a phenomenal country, and I mean that a little bit facetiously. You think the England football team get a hard time, which they do every World Cup, but it's pretty much like that with the All Blacks the whole time. It doesn't matter whether you're playing Spain, Portugal, South Africa, England, New Zealand expects you to win that game, and they expect you to win it well and play in a particular style that identifies all the qualities that New Zealanders think that they hold about themselves. So it's a kind of like impossible brief to deliver, but you've got to come up with answers for these people. You've got to live in that space and understand that's what the job is. So I think that takes a particular personality to be able to cope with that scrutiny, with that expectation. He was a tough dude, Steve. Yeah, a really tough, mentally prepared guy. He knew what was coming at him. He didn't shirk away from it. And I think that's been a story that gets told throughout the book, really, is that he talked about walk towards the pressure. Yeah, he preached that to the players, but he also did it himself a little bit. He knew that he couldn't hide, and that's been a big factor in his success, I think.
It's an interesting point you make about New Zealand being, I mean, the All Blacks are the ambassadors. No, more so than diplomatic service, they are the ambassadors of New Zealand. And every time, and even in an era now where we get, in the Northern Hemisphere, we get the autumn internationals. So we get South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Argentina coming over to Northern Europe, to the, you know, Northern Hemisphere. But, you know, an All Blacks tour back in the day when All Blacks tour was a proper, not just three tests, but, you know, a five-week, six-week test. Yeah. This was an international event. And more so than any other nation, as you said, the All Blacks represent New Zealand better than any diplomat ever could.
Mm. Yeah, and that's right. So that was the backdrop to what that job entails. And the other thing you got to remember here is he inherited a world champion team. Mm. Now, most coaches, I know in the English Premiership, you've got guys that managers go out all the time. So the best place to come in is when they've just fired the manager, because you can only go up at that point. You can't get any worse than the guy before you. But Steve took on the job of a world champion team. So he inherits the team in 2012, who are the world champions. Not only that, but they're full of aged veteran players, some of the best players we've ever seen. Richie McCaw, Daniel Carter, Conrad Smith, guys that, you know, worldwide names, even in a small sport like rugby. And these guys are in their early 30s. So you're thinking, well, they can't hang around for too much longer. He's going to have to rebuild an entirely new team here. And the only way he can really take them is down. And that was the thing about Steve. He sort of pitches up on day one. These guys think they're the world champions. He sits them down on day one and says, look, I don't really care that you're world champions. That means absolutely nothing. We've got to go to a higher level yet. So he set them the task. He said, you're world champions, but our goal is to become the most dominant team in the history of rugby. That's our goal. Now, we can debate what that actually means, but for them, it ultimately meant winning the next World Cup, becoming the first team to win back-to-back World Cups. It meant recording a perfect season, you know, go through an entire calendar year without losing a game. It meant winning the Bledisloe Cup, the Tri Nations, whatever. It meant winning all these things, but it also had a wider remit than that. It was about how they conducted themselves, how they played, standards that they set at training, you know. So first training they go to, he's not very happy with the way they train, first day on the job type thing. So he sits them down and says, look, I thought, you know, we've got to be pretty clear here. We all sat in a room a while back and said, we're going to want to be the most dominant team in the world. That's not how the most dominant team in the world trains. That's rubbish. So we start again. We set the standard that we want to train at, and that's what we want to play at. So that was a big goal for them, to become the most dominant team in the world. And he like, you know, the All Blacks would leave it up to everyone else to determine whether they fulfilled their goal. And I think they did. And I think most people would probably agree that that team really was the most dominant team rugby's ever seen.
It is an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, a new boss comes in and he goes to the world champions. And, you know, Richie McCaw, you know, damn the impossible point, the unstoppable points machine Carter. I mean, these are people who are, you know, the greatest people ever to tread on a rugby. They could just turn around and go, you know what? You're talking out your proverbial. And I'm just thinking back to, you know, people saying you're not good enough and giving all these speeches. I remember when the Lions came to New Zealand, that disastrous time they came down and, you know, O'Driscoll got taken out in the first test, and there were all these motivational speeches like from Alistair Campbell, and you see the videos and you just cringe inwardly because these are people who don't know what they're talking about, basically trying to get a bunch of hardened, you know, Lions, for goodness sake, the highest honour that a Northern Hemisphere player can get, you know, and it misfired badly. Why Hanson? What in his background? What in his makeup? Because you mentioned that people managing skills, and if you are the World Cup winning captain of the New All Blacks, you would think that man management skills, you know, trying to manage Rich McCaw or Carter, you don't need to do that. But what in Hanson's makeup made him so special? Where did it all is it his career in the police? Is it his career going up through the lower leagues, or what made him tick to get them tick at such a high rate?
Good question. His father was a huge influence on him. Look, I never met his dad. His dad died really just when Steve took the job on, or the head coaching job on, so I never met Dez. I know a lot of people that knew him really well. Dez was a real character, salt of the earth, hardworking guy, big background in training race horses. And they loved him and Steve both had a love of training and building, you know, race horses, build them, whatever. I don't know. but they learned a hell of a lot about humans by studying horses together. You can't, that's Steve's big phrase, you can't bully a horse. So, you know, you got to learn how to work with your horse. There's a big factor there. His father was a real rapscallion dude, real lovely man, warm, but used humor all the time. Humor as a way of connecting with people. He ended up being a publican. So Steve grew up in a world where he was very influenced by his father. He learned, he wasn't academically bright. He wasn't bad, but he never really applied himself at school either. So he was actually, he moved school when he was about 13, 14 to go to a big, sort of leading school in Christchurch. And he wasn't really performing all that well. So he used his ability for humor, for being a bit cheeky, for being a bit clever, to get himself out of trouble all the time. And it was his way of dealing with people, I suppose, was he used his wit and his quick-witted ability to turn people around and manipulate them, I suppose. And you're right, he joined the police eventually after he left school. And like, I think he saw the dark side of the world as a policeman. You know, he used to often talk when he came into the All Black job, people would say, oh, how do you cope with the pressure? And he'd say, well, pressure is knocking on a parent's door and telling them that their son or daughter has been killed in a car crash. That's pressure. That's, you know, I've seen the worst that life can throw at people. So he had to, you know, if you've been able to go and knock on someone's door and tell them the worst news they're ever going to hear, you know, and you're also able to use humor in other occasions to settle people or disarm them. He had a kind of a real array of weaponry through the school of life, I suppose, through family, through school of life, through learning about the horse racing industry, training horses, all of that combined. And he saw early that, you know, if you want to get the best out of people, yeah. The other thing that he's very good at, I mean, you talk about Clive Woodward there or Alistair Campbell with these motivational messages, which I'm pretty sure came out of a handbook, you know, or a Christmas cracker, and or the latest management consultant brochure had come up with them or whatever. Steve's language was very fitting with his upbringing. So University of Life guy. You were never in any doubt as a journalist or as a player or anyone. Steve spoke in really simple, abrupt terms. He told you what he wanted, why he wanted it, when you were going to give it to him. And that really matters. You know, like plain English told down the line. We're sitting here talking about rugby players. You know, they bang their heads into each other a fair amount of times. You've got to keep it really simple. That was important. I mean, Clive Woodward may have had brilliant messages to sell to his Lions players, but he told them probably in entirely the wrong way, whereas Steve look, son, what I need you to do today is go out and tackle people, do that, and I'm happy. That's how he kept his language pretty simple. It's quite colourful. Obviously can't, you know, give you the full array of what his language was really like, but you get the picture. It was very guttural. It was very direct, and that helped.
And when it starts to take shape, and, you know, we can go on about the tours coming up to Northern Hemisphere, but, you know, the crunch matches are the Aussies and above all South Africa, because that is, you know, those are the two heavyweights of world rugby. No matter how, you know, as an English person, I look at, you know, where we are in all of France or whatever, the one that you want to see it week in, week out are these two opposing stars, if you like, as well of rugby. There's New Zealand with the Brits and the South Africa, and we know their strengths.
Yeah. Yeah, look, respect was the key there. Understanding that, understanding the history, understanding, like, there's a difficult history between New Zealand and South Africa. People don't fully understand it. I haven't lived here for long enough to fully understand it either. But these two were playing each other for the last 100 years. There was 100th anniversary last year. So we've got a wider socio-political history built into that relationship. Some really big landmark moments in New Zealand's history about hosting the Springboks here in 1981 that ripped the country apart. You know, we saw the Olympics, 76, really affected by New Zealand's decision to go there and play a tour. So Steve understood that relationship, I think, really well, but there was a real mutual respect for what each team did, the lifestyles that they lived, the kind of whole background, the history. So that was hugely important. He also had that with the Australians as well. But he also loved goading them. He loved, I guess the English would love to be goading the Australians right now in the Ashes, but it ain't happening. You know, there's nothing better than getting under Australian skin, but you can only do it when you're dominating them, when you're good enough to beat them. That's where you earn the respect from the Australians, is to beat them. And he was brilliant at knowing how to get under the skin off the field, how to really poke and push and really irritate them, and then double down on it by producing All Black teams that could hammer them on the field as well. So he was pretty clever around how he understood history to manipulate situations.
And understanding history, but also having to deal with an All Black team, which has still got some of the great names, the Carders in it and the whole thing, but also in the full glare of not only the media spotlight, but also the social media spotlight. I mean, 2015, the build-up to that World Cup, for example, you know, England are supposed to come and, you know, do wonderful things, and we knew what happened to them. They absolutely imploded. And he manages to, you know, and at the same time, there's the whole Maori question. There are so many things apart from rugby being thrown at that could, and I mean, rugby players are only human, and they're men, and they're full of testosterone. They're young men full of testosterone. They want to let their hair down. You know, we've seen time and time out, just go back to the football situation, to keep that discipline, to keep them on the straight, and to keep them winning. You know, you may be playing no respect to the Pumas and Argentina. You may be playing a Wales, but as you know, rugby, you can have an off day, and the All Blacks have had off days since then, since Steve left, and that invincibility goes. So how does he keep them? How does he keep them focused? How does he keep them in line? But how does he still keep them, you know, respected, regarded, and winning?
Yeah, good. Well, something really important to point out here is that he also, I wouldn't say he lucked out, but let's not forget that you're mentioning, or I've mentioned names. He had the single greatest captain / rugby player ever. Sorry, but the guy is just a freak of nature. You know, don't underestimate how
you're referring to, of course,
the Messiah, Mr. Richard Hugh McCaw, who is a different beast to any rugby player that's ever walked the land. Seriously, this guy's leadership ability, different kind of level altogether. So this guy was. He was the massive driving force. So you have McCaw and Hansen as a kind of blunt force unit commanding at the helm here. It's pretty intimidating for everyone. So don't underestimate the influence of McCaw as a leader, as a driver. His teammates were just terrified of him, you know, of failing to live up to the expectations and demands that he made of them. So that's a huge peer pressure within the team, or living up to this guy's demands. Massive. And Steve allowed that to blossom. He used that. He gave McCaw authority to scare the living Jesus out of most of his team. Then you got Carter best number 10 ever to walk the planet as well. Don't underestimate the importance of a tactical genius like that in the team. So that's really important. There's a handful of other guys, Martin Nonu, Conrad Smith, Aaron Smith, Jerome Kano, Kieran Reid. These guys are once in a generation players. So he's put, he got the cattle. So he has some pretty extraordinary cattle to work with there. Let's not forget that. But in terms of how do you keep them winning? Well, they had their kind of mission statement of becoming the most dominant team in the world that they lived their lives by. You know, that's how we train, that's how we conduct ourselves. So that's the kind of overriding mission. But look, he was, you know, Steve was incessant. He used any tactic that he could. I mean, humiliation. They had these team reviews after every time they played a match. He'd set the chairs out in the team room on the Monday after the game, and they all had to sit in the order that they'd, the jerseys that they wore, and then they'd watch the game in slow-mo video, painfully going through it. And the first game they played was against Ireland, first game in charge, and Steve deliberately picks on McCaw in front of the whole team. Big strategy here. Best player in the world. I mean, the guy made about three mistakes in his entire rugby career. And there's Hansen standing up in front of the team, giving it to McCaw, going, why did you miss that tackle? He didn't miss a tackle, but, you know, why were you there? Why'd you do that? Not good enough. And he did deliberately to let everyone know that no one is safe. Best player in the world, captain, doesn't matter. Didn't live up to my expectations, which were ridiculous. But there you go. We'll humiliate that guy. Next guy, Carter, what are you doing? And it was a really powerful message to say to the rest of the team, look, yeah, these two are brilliant, but they're not above me getting stuck into them. And both McCaw and Carter nod and go, yes, boss, absolutely, totally agree. We'll fix that up. Powerful to use it in that way that no one, you know, some teams might never touch their superstars. I don't know if Lionel Messi ever gets told he had a bad game or balled out in front of his teammates. No idea. But McCaw did, Carter did, Conrad Smith did. And the younger guys on the team were like, wow, you know, didn't think it would be like that. Shit, you know, we've got to live up to expectation here. If that's what he's doing to the greatest player in the world, what the hell is he going to do to me if I drop the ball? So he did all that. He used humor. I mean, Conrad Smith told me in writing the book that there were times where he said there were times where honestly tears would be coming out of his eyes during a team review because Hansen would just be hammering him so hard. Why do you do that? You weren't in the right place. Talk me through it. And yeah, it was tough.
Yeah.
It was a really tough environment. And Conrad said there were times where he just wanted to take him outside and punch him. You know, he just, I hate you. I really hate you for doing this. He'd go away. 10 minutes later, he'd realize, actually, okay, a little bit over the top, but he's right. You know, I didn't make a good decision there. I could have done this, could have done that.
And that perhaps is a skill, isn't it? It's yeah, you can knock the guys down, but you have to build them up as well. You have to get to a point where they don't go, you know what, and you've lost them forever.
It's more about white noise. You know, if all you're offering is, you know, not good enough, not good enough, then guys switch off. And the real skill is knowing how uncomfortable I'm going to make you feel before I then change my mechanism and go, okay. And this is what he was really, really good at. He'd hammer them, you know, quite blunt language, tell them they're not good enough. You didn't do this, you didn't do that. But then he'd use humor at the end or halfway through. He'd make a joke. And the guys would say that sometimes you could be virtually crying, a grown man, you know, virtually crying in front of their peer group to definitely
rugby
crying.
Rugby players too. I mean, not, you know, this, we're talking rugby, you know, we're talking All Blacks here, you know.
Tough guys.
Yeah.
But then he'd flick the switch, say something hilarious, coin a one-liner, defuse everything, and everyone's back again. So he kept them on a string. Sometimes he'd go too far. You know, sometimes he would annoy the guys or be too harsh on them and he'd have to go and apologize and say sorry about that. But he was good at just changing that emotional tempo the whole time so that he'd make it. And he'd, you know, Kieran Reid told me that, you know, there were times where he just didn't know whether Steve was joking or whether he was serious sometimes about, you know, he'd say something like, oh yeah, hopefully you'll get picked next week. Ha 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 ha. And Kieran would be like, is he, I don't know, am I going to get picked next week? And he never really knew. He kept them really uncomfortable. Even the greatest players were left feeling a little bit uncomfortable about whether they're going to get picked the next week or what was. I mean, they almost did, but that just everybody was on edge because they never took anything for granted. You want to get picked, you got to play.
The book is called The Legacy. What is just? I know we've only got a minute and 20. So, what is, in your opinion, Steve Hansen's legacy?
The greatest, the most dominant All Black team in the history of rugby, probably the most dominant sports team in the history of sport. If we're honest.
The book is called Steve Hansen, The Legacy. It's by Gregor Paul, who we're talking to at the moment. As you can probably tell, Gregor, I could talk to you about this for at least the next 2 or 3 hours, but yeah. I'm going to do the sin of what they call crashing the news. If people want to find out more about you or about the book, do you have a website? Can they find you on social media? Where can they find you, my friend?
You can't find me on social media, but you can look up the New Zealand Herald, www.nzherald.co.nz. You'll find me. If you want to read me, you'll find me.
We'll find you. The book will be available as a virtual download as well. Via the TRE bookstore. The book is called Steve Hansen, The Legacy. It's by Gregor Paul, who he's talking to today. Gregor, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.